abiding nowhere, bring forth mind. If we translate the Diamond Sutra statement that way, it calls for something of us to whom it's addressed, to whom the Tathagata is addressing it, as opposed to abiding nowhere, mind comes forth. Of course, it's not different, and yet it's valuable to see that there is this aspect of the texts that we're looking at and the teaching where we're called on to testify with our own actions to the experiential state. So we have in the Shinshin Ming, the unbelieving mind or faith in mind, which begins, perfect way is not difficult, just not picking and choosing. Without holding to likes and dislikes, truth is clear. A hair's breadth difference, heaven and earth are set apart. So that's about a century earlier than the quote case from the sixth ancestor, which we talked about a bit yesterday, thinking neither good nor evil. What is your original face? But notice the difference going from perfect way is not difficult, just not picking and choosing, just not sticking to likes and dislikes, as a statement, whereas the sixth ancestor in this case is saying, thinking neither good nor bad, neither good nor evil, whichever way you want to translate it, what is true self? What is your true self, your original face? Asking you, pinning you, or in this case, the person he was speaking to, Ming, monk Ming, what is your original face? You need to show, actively demonstrate, realize for yourself, not just passively. And in the same way, the case with Daishan, the woman selling the tangin, the refreshments, didn't just quote the text saying, past mind is ungraspable, present mind is ungraspable, future mind is ungraspable. She then pinned him to the wall, so to speak, by saying, which mind are you going to refresh with this tea cake refreshment? And he couldn't respond. So it's important to see that conceptual understanding only takes us so far. Sometimes it entangles us so that we can't live. We can't experientially realize and manifest, actualize. And that's the whole point of our practice. Though concepts can be useful, if that's all we go, it's not much use in our life. So The sixth ancestor, after the case of thinking neither good nor bad, good nor evil, whichever way you translate the Chinese, goes off for a period of time, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, lives among, in the forests, among various forest people, hunters, as an ordinary person. He's not ordained, he's a lay person at that time, though he's already transmitted. And then he goes to a temple in southern China, and outside of the temple there's a temple flag, the wind is flapping. Two monks are arguing about it. One says, the flag is moving. The other says, the wind is moving. The sixth ancestor standing there. They're going back and forth. And he says, it's neither wind nor flag moving. It is mind moving. The monks were struck with this response. There's more to that case, but I'll leave that aside. I'll go to, this is in the Gateless Gate, there's Mumun's commentary. It is neither wind nor flag nor mind that's moving. Where do you see the heart of the ancestor? If you can see it clearly, you will know that the two monks obtained gold intending to buy iron. Also, you will know that the ancestor could not repress his compassion and made an awkward scene. His verse then goes, the wind moves, flag moves, mind moves, all of them missed it. Though he knows how to open his mouth, he doesn't see he was caught by words. Yeah. In one sense, saying, if we take his saying the mind is moving as a statement, and just that, in a way it's true, but in a way it's not so good. It's not so good because it's just conceptual, which anyone who studies Buddhist teaching would know. Anyone who knew theory would know. So theories, not so good. Not so good because it doesn't take us further. Though it shut these two monks up, we have to see that in a sense the sixth ancestor was saying something more. Saying something more when he says the mind moves. What more is he saying? He's not just telling them theory, though that could shut them up because then they can see that going on and on. Because what's important is the experiential. Could say, well, maybe he had to lower himself to say it in that way because these monks were obviously not capable of going beyond that since they were so caught up in this. Now, the comment of Mumon, in a way, is quoting something. Mumon's writing in the 13th century when he's putting this together, this collection of cases. Much earlier than that, about 150, 200 years, maybe less, after this situation, this case, it becomes a well-known incident. And there are a group of monks who are traveling to visit a great master, Master Yangshan, in China, Gyozan. This is a Japanese way of pronouncing his name, Gyozan. They want to study with him. He's at the top of a mountain where his monastery is. Many monasteries in China are in mountains. But at the bottom of the mountain, there's a guest house. So they got there late in the day and they were waiting for the next day. They were in the guest house. The guest house was run by Nun Miao Xun, who is a disciple of Master Yangshan. So there were 17 monks and they'd had their a little bit of rest from their travels, their pilgrimage, and they were sitting up discussing the koan. The wind move, the flag move, mind move. They were going back and forth about this. And then the nun comes out and says, "You donkeys have not come across the Buddha Dharma even in a dream, talking like that." And they ask her instruction. And she says, "It is neither wind, nor flag, nor mind that is moving." At that, all 17 were awakened, enlightened. They expressed thanks to her and decided they didn't have to go up and see the master. They already had their teacher and were her disciples. And they returned home to their monasteries without even going up to the top. This tale, story, is, as far as most people can find, the most people that were awakened at one time, 17 people. So this is what actually Mumun is quoting. Unfortunately, he doesn't give her the credit, but that's his style, is not to cite who he quotes most of the time. But it's not wind, not flag, not mine. So what is it? See, what is it that... This is what this case is about. What experientially can you show that's moving? What is it that they awaken to when she said, "Neither wind, nor flag, nor mind"? See, this is always what our practice is. What is this right here? Theories are useful. They certainly can be helpful at the stage when we're still caught up in the flag, the wind. I said it, she said it, mine, his. Those thickets are major problems for us and cause us trouble. So it's sometimes important to say, mind. Like sometimes asked, what is Buddha? Mind is Buddha. Mind is also, again, mind, heart is the same. It's all the same character. So translating it to mind, sometimes for us Westerners, adds a problem. Because we tend to, what should I say, objectify mind into certain aspects of our living and not other aspects. So sometimes we translate it, as I said, to heart-mind or mind-heart, but that's such an awkward phrase. But sometimes we have to clarify that so that we don't get caught in objects and subjects, but then we turn mind into subject. So ask, what is Buddha? Then have to be told, not Buddha, not mind, not think. So what is it? See, this is always what our practice is, not as something that we have to go looking for, but as something taking ongoing practice. If I say it in the way Joko talks about it, it's being the experiencing, letting go over and over of thoughts, emotions, and experiencing is still has a cloud for us because we objectify it or subjectify it, and we take it until, as she says, maybe 100, maybe 1,000, maybe 10,000 times, and then at some point there's a shift in which we see, be who we truly are, which is who we always are, and yet we get in trouble because we refuse to be who we are. We refuse to be who we are because we hold to this or that theory, this or that story, this or that abiding. So we can go back to the very beginning of what the Tathagata says in the Diamond Sutra, abiding nowhere. Not wind, not flag, not mind. What is it? What comes forth? In fact, come forth. So, if we use words like true self or original face, that's fine, as long as we don't get caught in those words. Even true person, no rank, Linji talks about. Fine, where he says, on your lump of red flesh is true person, no rank, always going in and out of the face of each one of you. And nevertheless, he says, if you don't testify it with your experience, look, look. But he's always grabbing you and saying, what about it? Show it to me. See, that's the fundamental of our practice, to always testify right here to who and what this is. It's not some big deal. Even used up piece of toilet paper is what the true person, no rank, is. He says shit wiping stick, but most of us don't relate to that because we don't know how that has any cultural context. But we all know about a used dirty toilet paper. So. Of course, when you get stuck with true person, no rank, Dogen then is going to add his comment. True person of rank, bring me that person. Rank, no rank, don't get caught in those either. So, In a way, I want us to see how these are all related across centuries and across persons and texts. Whether we're talking about Joko now, saying it's what's really here, not what you think about it, not how it should be, not how it shouldn't be, not how it could be, not how the theories say. It's always this experiencing being just this moment. And yet you have to testify. Each of us has to testify. Not just once, but over and over in manifesting it as our life. Concepts are fine, but unless it's experientially so, unless it's actualized so, they're not good enough. Not good enough, not because anyone else is judging us, but because it doesn't take care of the circumstances of our living dying. It doesn't take care of when we're pinned to the wall by circumstances, which are nothing but our life. All we encounter is nothing but this life moving in all directions, abiding nowhere. Can't call it flag, can't call it wind, can't call it mind. Okay, I'll stop here. Since some of you have been listening to me go on about this for now 3 days, so, if not longer.
So.
Yes.
First of all, I want to say I appreciate your bringing up these nuns yesterday, the one who we didn't know the name of, but today you said you would say the name, and I appreciate that.
Right. Well, it's a different person today.
I know, you said a different person, yeah. But yesterday's, we didn't know the name of the person from yesterday.
Yeah.
But today, you had said yesterday, we're going to put another one today, and yes. You said who it is.
And let me mention, since I mentioned a collection yesterday, but it was the wrong collection. There's a collection that has many of these women, called Awakened Women, and comments about it. It's a modern book. It's called The Hidden Lamp. So it's a collection of comments by women teachers, mostly in America. I think it's all in America, but I don't want to say all because someone will say, well, there's this woman from Australia and this woman from Europe. So you'll excuse me. Modern day women commenting on these cases. I think there are 100 cases, but I can't say for sure now. So, but go ahead.
So, and then, well, you started out the first talk, the first night actually, we talked about the guiding, the guidelines, three particular points of
yes.
guideline. Non-talking, non-looking around, non-social breathing.
Yes.
We talked about that more the next day.
Yes.
And now, the thing about, let's just take this particular koan, story about the flags.
Uh-huh.
The flag, and you know, is the flag? How? What's moving the flag? So, and then, to me, I guess what I see is that in terms of experiencing, which is difficult to discuss and describe. But when there's the talking, the looking around, the social readings, it's almost impossible, I think. I mean, I'm not experiencing that.
Yes.
You know, I'm not, you know, just, you know, I one isn't experiencing, well, I'm not, I'll just say that. But when it's not, when there's that, there, the opportunity to be with the non-talking, non-looking around, non-social breathing, then there's something, I'll just say it's experiencing for just this moment here. And then what I notice is that fairly quickly there's talking again.
Yes.
Internal.
Yes. Yes. The same difference.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so, you tell the story and she said it's neither of those three things and they all were enlightened.
Yes.
Well, okay, where's my enlightenment? what does it mean to be enlightened?
Good. So, to start with, you need to know you are nothing but enlightened. You're nothing but awakened. Except we don't see it for ourselves. That's the theoretically, as I quoted, the perfect way, the awakened life. Your awakening is nothing but your life as is. But as soon as we go to good, bad, me, not me, subject, object, and hold on to those, get caught in those likes and dislikes, then we create trouble and we miss ourselves. So from the beginning, you're nothing but this true person, no rank. Nothing but your first effort is nothing but the effort of your realized life, your awakened life, your enlightened life. Your first effort of just sitting upright and breathing in and out. Your first effort as a baby is already the awakened life. Nothing else. But we keep on covering it up. We keep on covering it up. So in a sense, we need to make practice effort. Not to get something else, but to cease being fooled by all sorts of things. That's why we call it, whether it's delusion or ignorance, it's because we fool ourselves. Whether it's habits, whether it's bodily, whether it's so-called mental, emotion, thought, whichever way we look at the different facets of what we do, that's the only thing that keeps us from being who we are. And it doesn't keep us from being who we are, yet it seems that way to us. And worse, it seems that way to us, leading us to harm and suffer and cause all sorts of difficulties when none of them need to be. That's the point. So those guidelines for Sesshin aren't designed to get you anywhere else. They're encouragements so that you don't do in Sesshin what we often do in our life, which blinds us. So in a way, Sesshin is being this, if I use the word, unified mind, touching, being this collected mind of the universe that is our life. That's what Sesshin is. That's why it's so simple. It's just ordinary things. It's just sitting and standing and walking. We don't do any super ordinary things. Anyone could do it. Except we have such a hard time and unwillingness to be simple, to be ordinary, to be exactly where we are. So I don't know if I responded to what you asked, but you can say more if you wish. See, we don't have to go looking for any so-called, in fact, we can't go looking for any so-called awakening or anything like that. It's not even a big deal because you are already that. The practice and process is to live the awakened life as best we can. And then, at some point, we do or don't taste it and realize it, or not. It doesn't. It doesn't add one bit to you. It doesn't take away one bit. And yet, we cease to do what causes trouble. Or maybe cease a little bit to do a little bit more than otherwise do what causes trouble for ourselves and others. I don't talk too much about it. Joko doesn't talk too much about it. Because if you make it a big deal, then it becomes another pie in the sky. Or a turd in the zendo. So. Okay?
I just want to... Yeah. One thing I'd say is I don't tend to think about enlightenment myself really that much. I mean, it's just that hearing a story like that, and it's like, oh, you know, it's intriguing. There's
good.
Just something intriguing about that. Oh, yeah. That's all. But that's all I want to say right now. Thank you.
Good. You're welcome. Thank you.
Interesting she called them donkeys.
That's the expression in the... it's a way of... you're braying at you know, that's a translation of the obviously a Chinese text, and I can't tell you if there was an accurate reporter there or someone just added that... We have to take any of these as somewhat edited versions because we're talking about that's, let's say, 8th, 9th century. And texts get copied and you can actually see, I mean, scholars look at it and they could look at texts like the text that I quoted from yesterday, the Platform Sutra, and you could see different versions of it in year 700 and year 800, and unfortunately we have there's a place in northern China where in the desert on the Silk Road, Dunhuang, there's Dunhuang. There were many manuscripts that were in the cave, and the cave was closed up, and because of the dry atmosphere, they all survived. So they have very early manuscripts, and then you could compare those with later manuscripts, and you could see, you know, like from a 10th century, 11th century, 12th century, and then you could, some scholars look at it and look how there's changes at different times. Now, part of the reason there's changes, it's all, much of it is copied. Not all of it. Some of it, as I said, is printed, but much of it is copied, and people miscopy, change. We're talking about over centuries. We're talking about a millennia away almost from us, and over centuries. So these texts get edited. So whatever version I use, and you know, version of a translation, it, you know, there's different words that get put in. So, and who knows what a donkey means in China at that time? Whereas to us, calling someone a donkey means something also. If any of you remember, when I say donkey, or you donkeys in that way, the thing that comes to mind, I used to watch with my kids a animated version of Pinocchio, and there's a place where Pinocchio and his other kids get turned into donkeys, and they're just standing there braying, and that's the image that comes to mind of, you know, braying donkeys discussing this and that. That's the image that comes to mind.
And they're stubborn too, aren't they?
Yes, these monks were arguing their position. So a group of them, brah, 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 or however you donkeys make noise. Brah. No, I can't even do it. It'll come to me at some point. No. Yes, like a group of donkeys that bray at each other. I don't know if that's the word. Yes. And notice they they knew what they got, and they just said, okay, we're taken care of. We can go back to our monastery and continue our practice. We're, you know, we don't have to go up and see the master, even though that's what they came for. Actually, I'm not sure which character it is. It might be the same. Her name is, in Japanese, her name would be pronounced Myoshin. So the Myo is, sounds like Yo-Myo, but I can't be sure if it's the same character. I'd have to look at the Chinese character to see if it's the same or not. I can't tell you. I don't have the Chinese text here in front of me. I probably have it somewhere in here, but I'm not going to go looking now. Nothing else? Good. So you're all, please continue your practice, your manifesting, being this awakened life you are. Whether you see it, realize it or not, in a way that's, I should say, it's not the goal, even though this text might make it seem that way. It's just a step. When it occurs, but it's not what it's about. It's about living this being just this moment, being this abiding nowhere, or noticing where you're abiding and seeing what needs to be taken care of so that you can, for a moment, open up the hand and let it go. Let that abiding go and come forth right as you are, right who you are, the whole universe that you are. Then, no problems. Thank you.